Hi, I'm Matt Lusty, representing the political middle. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I am joined by Sasha Lux Morgan on the left and Nick Dunn on the right. How are you guys doing?
Good, Matt.
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. Good to have you on. We've got lots to talk about today, a lot happening on the national scene and a lot happening on the local scene. We're going to start off talking with some of the national stuff. The Mueller investigation has been in the news, and I was surprised. Basically, the federal delegation from Utah, our senators and Congress, have basically said the same thing, right? They've said it's time for the country to move on. So, Sasha, we're going to start with you. Is it time for the country to move on? Are we in a good place or are we not in a good place?
I don't think we can make a determination either way. We haven't seen the full report. And that's, you know, great that Barr went ahead and released his summary. But I think it's too soon to really be deciding, like, yep, we can definitively move on as a country, nothing to see here, in the absence of having all of the facts. And, you know, I think it's great that our delegation was all able to come to a similar viewpoint about wanting to move towards national unity. And while I do think that is a laudable ultimate goal, I don't think that that's a concrete step we can really start to make yet.
That's an interesting perspective. I want to point out, you know, you said it's a laudable goal, and I'd agree with that. The thing that was surprising to me is that this was bipartisan, this call to move on. Even Representative McAdams, right? Ben McAdams says it's time for the country and Congress to move on. That's a direct quote. So I was surprised by that because you hear a lot of Democrats saying, whoa, 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 hold on. We still have Donald Trump in the White House, so we're not done yet, right? And that brings up to me the question of what's the end goal? Nick, I don't know if you want to comment on that or if you want to comment generally on this whole move on concept, but where are you and where's the right on this?
I mean, as for me, I would probably agree with both our congressional delegation and with Sasha, actually, that on the one hand, yeah, there, as far as we know from Attorney General Barr, there is no evidence of criminal wrongdoing as it relates to collusion, which should be good news for all of us. But I'm totally fine with the full report being public. I think We've been saying from the beginning that this process should be open and transparent when appropriate to make sure that we're not giving national security, putting that in danger. And so, yes, move on, but I think it's fine to release the full report. A lot of folks on the right have been saying for a long time, look, there isn't any actual evidence of, again, criminal wrongdoing as it relates to collusion. Speaking personally, if there is evidence, then I'm happy to see that prosecuted in the appropriate process. But in absence of evidence, yeah, we should move on and get to some real policy issues.
So this is kind of a funny question. I'm not sure how to answer it, but what does moving on look like, right? I mean, is it we're at a funny point right now in the country, right? We're at a point that I don't know that we've been at as a country for years, right? I mean, definitely since before I was alive. This is a young Politico show, by the way, to everyone listening. We've got millennials on board, and it's wonderful. But that said, what does moving on look like? Sasha, what are your thoughts?
So I just sort of want to circle back to a little bit. You pointed out that Representative McAdams was part of the sort of like joint Utah congressional voice. And it might shock you to know, but not all Democrats are the same.
Whoa,
I know,
what?
I know. You
I just assumed that all Republicans and Democrats were the same.
You got it. You nailed it. We can wrap up and go home now. So, yes, he did come to that statement that we should move on. And what is moving on look like for me personally? The end goal isn't to have some secret gotcha moment with the Mueller report and, you know, the sky's open and all of a sudden Barack Obama's here for a third term. We have
that.
Actual policy objectives as Democrats. We want to make the world a better, fairer, more equitable place. We want to work on the issue of climate change. We want to advance economic and social and racial equality. And sure, Donald Trump is in the White House. We have work to do. It doesn't matter who's in the White House. We have work to do.
That's an interesting perspective. And, you bring up a good point, though, that, you know, Ben McAdams is definitely a more moderate Democrat. He's a more moderate political figure. But I love that thought. I love that concept of we've got work to do. It doesn't matter who's where and in what position. We got to fight for the cause. Nick, let's get your comment on that because I can see you nodding.
Yeah, to kind of agree with a lot of what Sasha's saying is that I would echo the same sentiment. We have work to do. And a lot of those big issues, Republicans and Democrats, I think for the most part, have a lot of common ground as far as the things we want for the country to be in the future. Some of those visions may differ, and of course, the ways to get there is going to differ a lot. But my hope would be that the more we can shift to really aggressive, passionate, good faith, respectful policy debates. Sasha might say, well, let's do this on climate change, and maybe the Republican perspective is different. That's the kind of stuff that excites me most about the future, and especially heading into 2020 with a presidential election and all the candidates we've seen announced already. That's where I think we can highlight the best ideas from both sides, the best policy differences, and really get to work and just see who can convince more American voters come 2020.
Now,
you mean like in 2016 when Democrats did convince more American voters?
I was looking for something that we could disagree on.
The Electoral College would be a valid discussion point as well.
So I do want to put this out since we've been talking about policy differences. We have the notable senator from Utah Senator Mike Lee, has got a lot of media this last week for some comments he made regarding the Green New Deal, which is a policy perspective being pushed forward by Representative Ocasio-Cortez, right? And I can see Sasha getting ready to jump on this one. What were your thoughts, Sasha, as Senator Lee basically put up the argument that the Green New Deal is not the way for Americans to go, that in fact it's kind of a silly perspective? What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. So we're gonna start off by sidestepping the Reagan on a velociraptor nonsense.
I actually liked that was on the Senate floor.
From a policy perspective, we heard earlier from Nick about operating in a good faith legislative space, and the Republican Party has not shown that it is willing to do that on issues of climate change. That we have had evidence going back 50, 60 years that climate change is an issue. We have the data. Like, let's stop pretending that scientists make things up and aren't real. But the Republican Party has refused to come to the table to legislate good faith solutions. We've got all sorts of flooding in the Midwest right now. And so Senator Lee's, what he's going to do to talk about climate change is to get up on the Senate floor and with cartoon photos and just yell about a freshman legislator from a state that he's not from. I expect better. If he wants to have a serious policy discussion, come with a serious policy discussion. Come with facts and ideas. Don't show up with cartoons.
Nick, what's the response from the right?
Again, I agree with a lot of what Sasha's saying, is that we need serious policy proposals. I don't think the Green New Deal is it. The problems with the rollout, the FAQ document that was apparently, they had all kinds of claims that it wasn't either a finished draft or it wasn't a real thing. I think we do need serious discussion on issues like climate change. You know, Senator Lee, his antics were amusing, to say the least. But I think the common ground, again, that we can agree on is that if this is an issue that we agree is something we need to work on, let's have serious policy discussions about it. I will agree that the Republican Party needs to do better at bringing forward some good ideas that are pragmatic and cost-effective that we can actually implement both here in the nation and ways we can lead globally. So I think... Yes, the Republican Party can do better there. I also don't think the Green New Deal comes close to being that real serious policy proposal.
And that's a fair statement to say that maybe you don't think that the Green New Deal is the way to go. But we can't sit around and just talk about climate change like it's something 20, 30, 40, 50 years off. It isn't. And it's not like we can just be like, oh, well, climate change, it isn't an issue now, and ignore it. Like, it's an inevitable sort of biological outcome. It is something we are going to have to deal with, and putting our heads in the sand is not going to serve us well in the future, economically or in terms of quality of life.
I would say that today I don't know a single conservative or Republican who's ever told me they fundamentally do not believe that climate change is happening at all. Most folks that I know of on the right would say, yeah, I believe it's happening. Yeah, I believe that there's some degree of man-made variable that's impacting that.
But and that's been a really fascinating shift over the past couple of years to even get to that point.
But go ahead, Nick. You want to finish your thought?
Yeah, just to say that so the idea that we, in some ways I think it's a little bit of a straw man to say that we're just going to sit on our hands and do nothing and hope that everything turns out fine. Again, both sides can be better about bringing serious policy proposals to the table. And that's something that I'd push for on my side as much as on the left.
So one thing that I'd say, and this is coming from this moderate middle perspective, I'm supposed to say that since I'm, you know, representing the moderate middle, is that I am so sick of entrenched talking points on either side of a lot of issues, but especially on climate change. Not every Republican is the monopoly man with the monocle in his eye saying, let's tear down every tree for the sake of profit. And not every Democrat is saying we need to kill all Republicans because they don't believe in climate change, right? I would really like us to get to a place regarding climate change where we can have a conversation that is something like, you know what? We've got a capitalist country and we have real air quality needs. We have real climate needs. How can we find a common place? How can we incentivize companies to think in a way that is that is going to be helpful to our ecosystem? How can we do that? And I would really just really like to get there. We've got to close out this segment. So we'll come back to this as we start the next segment before we take a break. We're also going to be previewing some local issues, some things that happened in the state legislature. So stay with us. I'm Matt Lusty in the Political Middle. I'm joined by Sasha Lux Morgan on the left and Nick Dunn on the right. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
I'm Nick Dunn on the right.
I'm Sasha Lux Morgan on the left.
And I'm Matt Lusty in the Political Middle. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. So we were talking about a lot of national issues in the first segment. We're going to jump into local issues to start the second segment. We just finished the legislative session here in Utah, part-time legislature, 45 days a year, having to be up on the Hill for some of that. I'm really grateful it's a part-time legislature. This year, we recorded a record number of bills. 573 bills were passed. Last year, or a couple years ago, 535 bills were passed. And these bills touched a number of issues. We're going to start off by talking about ballot initiatives. Ballot initiatives have been something that really have gotten a lot of media attention, a lot of local attention. And the reason is because they deal with some important issues, right? Medicaid, marijuana, so Proposition 4 deals with political boundaries. So we're going to start off talking about that. We're going to start with Nick on the right. What are your thoughts just as an overview on what happened in the legislature with ballot issues, right? You saw before this last session, Prop 2 got changed a little bit. Prop 3 was also changed again this year. What are your thoughts, Nick? Take it away.
Yeah, so first big picture. When you look at ballot initiatives and then the legislature making actions to amend them, of course, it caused a lot of controversy throughout the state and some folks frustrated with those changes. But I think it perhaps speaks to a bigger issue because both medical marijuana and the Medicaid expansion issue are clearly issues that Utahns have been passionate about. And that passion reaches a critical mass to create these ballot initiatives so there's a lot of questions now about, well, should we reform the ballot initiative process to make it harder to get ballot initiatives? I'm not convinced that's the right way to go. What I would personally like to see is the legislature being a little bit more proactive on these issues before we get to the point where we need ballot initiatives to get them to act. Now, again, as far as the policy outcomes, I like what the legislature did with both medical marijuana and the Medicaid expansion. I think it's a better approach to solving those policy issues. But again, I think let's have our policymakers be more proactive and lead a little bit more aggressively so they're not being pushed so hard by their public through the initiatives.
Sure, Sasha.
I frankly was really disappointed by the watering down of both Props 2 and 3 that the legislature did in the lead up to the session and then during the session. The legislature had years to address these issues. No one told them that they couldn't address the issues. There was just a lack of political will. In my mind, there is nothing more small government than a group of citizens coming together to get an initiative on the ballot and then to advocate to have it passed. Utah has one of the highest standards for what it takes to get an initiative on the ballot in the country. The thought that we need to make it more difficult because the people passed a couple of initiatives that the Republican state leadership didn't like it's absurd. If you don't like the way that the people are solving the problems that you're punting, solve them first. There's no reason that it had to get to this point. And there's no reason to make it harder to get anything on the ballot. It's already onerous enough. If you talk to any of the groups that were sort of organizing and behind those ballot initiatives, it was a huge amount of work to get those signatures gathered in 26 of the 29 counties and then to do enough voter engagement and information and outreach that people were willing to vote for the initiatives. if the legislature doesn't like it, they should do better.
I could go off on ballot initiatives. The first thought that I have on ballot initiatives is, one, what a terrible way to do government, right? What a terrible way to govern, right, for creating policies. And what I mean by that is, frequently when a ballot initiative comes down, it's put on by a special interest who, like you're saying, Sasha, does a ton of work. It's very small government. It's very grassroots. It's people who want change, and they're petitioning their government for change, right? But frequently when special interests start that or fund that, what happens is you have policy that is not vetted, right? And so I don't think the policy from an initiative is always good. But what I will say is that I agree. I don't think that change would have happened unless you would have had these petitions. I do not think that medical marijuana, I do not think that Medicaid, in fact, I know because Medicaid expansion had come up before to the legislature and didn't pass. I don't think it would have passed. Now, the problem is, though, is when it got changed, what happened? Invariably, the argument was, well, wait a minute, the legislature is changing the will of the people. And to me, that was a little bit frustrating because I think that the policy outcomes honestly were better when they were vetted by the legislature with their staff. Here's an example, right? So Medicaid. Medicaid was the term watered down came up. And I think that's actually a fair term. But we've seen in multiple states that what was expected enrollment for Medicaid, for example, when California passed Medicaid expansion, they were expecting 900,000 people to enroll. Turns out it was 3.9 million people. Think about what kind of cost that was to the state. That would absolutely blow up the state budget in Utah. Now, regardless of whether or not you think that's the right thing to do, when you look at the financial projections for what that would have done to the state, ooh, that would have been bad. And interestingly enough, when I was at the Hill, I got to see a lot of discussions where it was like, well, what if we made this change? And the individuals who originally put Prop 3 on the ballot said, yeah, we're good with those changes. But it got consumed by the legislature is changing the will of the people. So I agree. If there was a more proactive approach to getting some of these issues taken care of, you're not going to go through the PR nightmare of having every legislator put through just the firing squad. We're not talking about the death penalty yet. Maybe we should, but the bit put through that. And so anyway, that's my take. I'm going to stop talking because I've been talking for like 3 minutes straight. Sasha, you look like you've got something to say.
Yeah, I do. So you started off, and really the phrase that sort of piqued my interest was special interest group. So I find that really fascinating terminology, especially in the idea of Medicaid expansion. So we're calling patients who need health care a special interest group, patients who have been traditionally unable to afford health insurance in that market a special interest group. It's not like there's big uninsured patient lobbying orgs out to like destroy the state's budget. It's people who need health care. Health care is a human need. There's at some point in all of our lives, we're going to need to be able to see a doctor, to pay for prescriptions, to seek treatment. And the other thing that I find really fascinating about this Medicaid expansion compromise that our legislature came up with is so much of it rides on the thought that we're going to get waivers from the Department of Health and Human Services. And I think that's a big gamble because to my knowledge, there have not been other waivers granted for the type of structure we would like to ask if we can set up our Medicaid expansion as. And I recognize that there are some like loopholes and caveats put in for if we do not get that that waiver, but to call patients a special interest group is too far.
Well, so what I would say in response to that, and Nick, we'll get your take on this, is the group Utah Decides Healthcare that put millions of dollars into the Prop 3 initiative, I would definitely call a special interest group. I wouldn't call needy patients a special interest group, but what we've seen is most groups, if they walk into the hospital and they need healthcare, nobody's going to get turned away. In fact, they can't be turned away, right?
For emergency care.
But here's the thing that I would say to that is this Utah Decides Healthcare was funded by an out-of-state group from California that is a union that has a due-paying membership of $900 a year. Medicaid expansion in the state of Utah is projected to bring membership up to $50 million for them, right? And so that's what I'm saying as a special interest group is none of these patients are driving billboards around legislators' homes, right? You had billboard truck companies get hired by this group to follow legislators home from the Capitol and light up their neighborhood. Poor patients don't have that kind of money, and I don't think it's fair representation. So to me, to say that there's a special interest group is absolutely fair. But to your point, patients also need representation. No argument there. Nick, we've left. You got to say something here, man. Jump on in.
I would say the best representation of all those patients in Utah are their elected representatives. Yes, democracy is an imperfect system, but our elected representatives are the ones that the voters in Utah select to go and hash out these policy issues. And so I think there are concerns about the process and the efforts pushing these ballot initiatives, and those are valid. But that's why I think it was right and responsible for the legislature to look at these from a policy standpoint to say, okay, we know that there is a certain groundswell of the will of the people to move the needle on these two big issues, marijuana and Medicaid. We, as the elected representatives of the state, how can we do it in such a way that it's fiscally responsible, that it accomplishes the core objectives of what all agree is that we want people who need medical care to be able to have access to medical care and the resources they need. And so that's why I think from, yes, there are process concerns, but from the policy perspective, with the marijuana compromise, for example, the group, I think you mentioned it, Matt, the group that pushed it initially agreed to the compromise. So on marijuana, if the argument is that the legislature turns back on the will of the people, then the pushers of the initiative also turn their back on the will of the people. Nobody's making the second claim. So therefore, I think we can say we achieved good consensus with that. And same thing with the Medicaid. The issue is not, if people are upset, the issue should not be with what the legislators did, but the issue should be with the methodology of the projections. If those projections are sound, the legislature did the right thing. If those projections are not sound, then we need to figure out how to have better methodology in projecting how much stuff will cost.
Well, this is, I love talking about initiatives, as you can tell. It's surprising to me, because you always hear the word ballot initiatives. You're like, it's going to be boring. But you have so many people have these opinions, they jump in. Sasha, turn your head. Maybe it's not boring. So we've got just a few minutes left. I want to turn our attention to the Salt Lake City mayoral race. Mayor Biskupski, she dropped out of the race. She cited serious and complex family situations and that her commitment is to her family and her role as a mayor. So she's not going to be focusing on running a race. At the same time, Senator Luz Escamilla jumped in, and we also have Jim DeBacchus, David Ibarra, David Garbett, and Stan Penfold, who all say they're jumping in. Wow. Where is Salt Lake City going? What's the future of Salt Lake City? Sasha, what do you think?
I think it's going to be a really interesting race. I've been playing a little game. Will we have more Democratic candidates for president or mayoral candidates in Salt Lake City?
It's a good game.
I think even on your list, you left off Councilwoman Erin Mendenhall, who I think also announced.
Oh, yeah.
And I know there's been another couple of names as well. So the list is getting really long. So I think it's going to be a good campaign. I really hope that people stick to policy issues and just really talk about the things that matter for Salt Lake City and what we need to be doing to move forward.
Nick, what's your thoughts on this? Obviously, being a Republican looking at this race, all of these names, by the way, that we've mentioned, it's a nonpartisan race in name, but these are all obviously left-leaning individuals. What are your thoughts on this? Because Salt Lake City has a huge effect on the state.
Right. Acknowledging that Salt Lake City is kind of more Sasha's geographical territory, but I used to live there and I love Salt Lake. I think the big thing, one, it will be a fun year, and there's some names on there that people that I like and are good people. I think the big thing that I'd be looking for, and perhaps other conservatives or Republicans in the state would be looking for, is whoever the next mayor of Salt Lake City is, we want them to be someone who is willing to not just be the philosophical leader of the political base of Salt Lake, but also be someone who can be the leader of the capital city of the state, and someone who's willing to work with the legislature, work with counties, work with other cities in a way that we can achieve some bipartisan compromise, some common ground on these other issues. We don't want someone who's obstructionist. We want someone who is willing to work with these other entities to make sure that our state as a whole can be successful, as well as the city itself.
Appreciate that thought. We've got just about a minute and a half left, so we're going to go to gripes. So we're going to start with Nick. Why don't we start with you? We gave you the last word on the Salt Lake mayor's race. We'll give you the first word on gripes and then go to Sasha.
Sure. My gripe would be kind of a big picture thing, is that I am incredibly tired of the way our political dialogue has been going nationally. Not here. In this room, I think we've been doing a good job. But if you watch national news, you come away with the idea that everyone on the left thinks that conservatives are evil, heartless people, and everyone on the right thinks that liberals are stupid and can't do math. We have bad faith discussions. We're attacking each other's worst arguments. You see it in every news cycle and every story. And I'm sick of it. It's damaging our democracy, and it's not good for us as people. That's the first thing I think we should do to improve our society, is have more good faith conversations where we attack ideas, but we respect the people.
Awesome. Sasha, what's your gripe?
So I have one big gripe and one little gripe. My big gripe is really going to be with Mike Lee's antics. We get to the point where people think that Utah is like normal and a reasonable place to live, and then he has to go on the Senate floor and show up with velociraptors. And then my second gripe is only kind of a gripe, but it's we're getting into municipal season and presidential campaign season. My gripe is candidates who don't pay their staff. No more unpaid internships. Pay your people.
No more unpaid internships. My gripe is that we don't have enough time. This has been a great discussion. Thank you, guys. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Matt Lusty from The Political Middle. I've been joined by Sasha Lux Morgan on the left and Nick Dunn on the right. Thank you to our producer, Anthony Scoma, and thanks to all of you for listening.